Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1 for Autumn Semester 2015.
Lecture 8, delivered on September 15, 2015. The title of this lecture is Annuities and Perpetuities.
Today, Annuities and Perpetuities. This is an extension of the Chapter 3 topic last week. This is Chapter 4. This is essentially, you're looking in this case, in the chapter 3, we were talking about single cash flow, a single lump sum of money. You remember the formula we had that the future value was the present value times 1 plus the interest rate to the number of periods, the periodic interest rate to the number of periods. So if I told you that it was annual compounding at 8%, for 5 years, that'd be an 8%, 0.08, and that'd be 5 years. But if I told you semi-annual compounding, you'd say, oh, well, the R then, the discount rate would be 8 divided by 2, 4% per compounding period, and there'd be a total, in that case, of twice as many periods as there was in the first one. I'll get back to that in a minute here. And then remember that the other one, PV, was the future value times 1 plus r to the negative nth. Very easy formulas. You probably wouldn't want to use the financial facilities of your calculator to do those. You can crank those out without that. Here's where it gets a little more complicated. There are formulas if there's more than one cash flow. Let me show you something here. Suppose that we're sitting here at 0. We got a 1, 2, 3, 4, and we're going to go out to, let's say, N periods. And we've got cash flows, the cash flow 2, cash flow 3, cash flow 4, and then out here to cash flow sub N. That is called an annuity. That's called an annuity. Now, if this goes on forever, not that you're going to live forever, well, you might, not even close. If it went on forever, we would call it a perpetuity. And there are, I'm going to show you a couple of examples, real-life examples of perpetuities. Companies live forever, theoretically. So when we calculate a current price, we are actually, one of the ways that we can do it, at least for some companies, is to consider an eternal cash flow and what its present value is right now. That should be the price of the stock. So there are examples of perpetuities, but we'll set that aside for a little while. Perpetuities are actually easy to calculate. But this is an annuity. Now, here's the thing about it. If... put this in your notes. It looks impressive. If CF sub I equals CF sub K, where I does not equal K, then this is a level annuity. Now, that's a fancy way of writing if all the cash flows are the same. But it looks cool in your notes that way. You can show it to mom. She'll be impressed. Okay? In other words, a level annuity is where it's the same amount every time. Now, that actually is not that uncommon, especially when we're looking at things like payments on a loan. What's the present value of your payments on a loan? Because all the payments on the loan would be the same. That's, in other words, level annuities are out there. Now, there's one other thing that you have to notice. I'll give you a word problem. Get the numbers out of it and throw away the words. But one thing you have to watch out for is whether or not each cash flow begins at the end of the period or at the beginning of the period. If each component is at the end of the period, then we call it an ordinary annuity. An ordinary annuity. Now, this is important. If each cash flow, if each component cash flow is at the beginning of the period, we call it an annuity due. Now, let me give you some examples of the two different kinds, where they would impact you in your real life. If you take out a loan, you're going to buy that dream car, a Yaris, okay? You get the loan. They're not going to make you pay the first payment right away. You're going to have it'll occur a month later, right? So that would be an ordinary annuity. But if you were starting to save, put away money, let's say every quarter, into an account so that you could have enough for a down payment on a house or something like that, you'd probably make your first put your first amount of money in right away. And then that last amount of money that you put in would hang for a month or a quarter before you actually used the money. That would be an example of an annuity due. Now, I'm going to show you on a calculator how to do these. I'm not even going to bother with a formula. I think I've heard that in accounting they still have you look at these tables of four-digit factor tables to do it. Honestly, honest to God, you got a calculator. We do it on a calculator these days. We don't do it those old-fashioned ways. But I'll show you on a calculator how to do these. And essentially, what we're going to do here is we're going to just jump in, do the problems, and then it makes a lot more sense than if I go through a lot of the theory of it with you. The textbook uses as its model calculator a BA2, a Texas Instruments BA2. They're okay. They're kind of cumbersome, kind of clunky for this kind of work. The Pearson has, for all of your homework and your tests and your quizzes, you can pop up a calculator right there. It's really self-explanatory. It's not much different from the one I'm going to show you. What I'll show you in class is how to do these on a TI-83-84. And it is just so easy to do them on these calculators that I wouldn't even want to try to go back to the old-fashioned ways. So if you've got a TI-83 or 84, follow along with me. Otherwise, I'm going to put a TI-83 emulator up here on the board so you can see this thing in action, so you can see how it works. And I'll start with what is the present value of a project that will generate $5,000 per year for 7 years, if you discount the cash flows, let's say at 9%, okay, watch. the beauty of this is it just makes, I hope you can see that. Well, let me kill off a couple of lights so you can see it a little better here. This, by the way, this TI calculator right here, there are apps you can get for these for your smartphone. If you go on a computer and you like this, just Google TI-83 online calculator, and in Google, in their Google facilities, they'll offer you this. You download it, you got it forever. So if you want a calculator just so you can have one on your computer, you know, one of the old time that's been around for a long, long time. I'm going to show you what you do with this. Okay, now here's something. If you look at your calculator and in the upper right-hand corner it says no, that means you got your calculator upside down. Turn it over. The hell with you. I'm trying to be funny this morning, okay? Okay. Now watch how I do this. Look. Apps, finance, you can hit 1 or enter. Now right here, see this TVM solver? That's a time value of money solver. It is the friend of every finance person around. I mean, I know so many finance people who just use this calculator because it's a scientific calculator with awesome finance functions on it. You can find net present values, internal rate of return, all kinds of stuff. And it's got incredible stats functions too. But anyway, we'll use the TVM solver here. Okay, look. N is the number of periods. Now, I didn't say anything about compounding annually or quarterly. It's just compounding annually. So the number of periods is the number of years here. It says 7, so we're going to put in a 7. Now, you just toggle down. I percent, for God's sake, put in the percent. In real math, we use the decimal, but on these calculators, they want you to key in the percent. So I said 9%, so we're going to key in a 9 here. Now, we don't know the present value, so just leave it alone. Even if it's another number, don't delete it. Just leave it there and fix it. Now, the payments are what we're going to key in, $5,000. In this case, future value would be if there were a kicker at the end, okay? Now, sometimes there is. If you think about, like, one place where there's a kicker at the end is a bond. Bonds pay a level coupon, but at the end, you get $1,000. So that'd be a place where there would be a 1,000 there on the FE. Another place more in your lives, if you lease a car, you'll pay level payments, but then at the end, you have the option to pay a certain lump amount of money to claim the title to the car. So sometimes there are kickers at the end. Just keep an eye on it. There might be, okay? Now, so in this case, leave FE equals 0. Now, P over Y and C over Y, those are 1. If you change those, I will spank you. And God knows I do it well. No. Anyway, shut up. Okay. Now, here's that thing. Watch out where your toggle is, end or beginning. This is where it's asking you, is this an ordinary annuity or an annuity due? Now, I didn't say anything about this, but if you think about it logically, is this going to be an ordinary annuity or an annuity due? What would you say? Just say it. No, it's going to be an ordinary annuity. Because, I mean, I'm going to buy a project. I'm not going to get my first $5,000 out of it right away. More than likely, if they don't say anything about it and there's no logical reason, it's going to be the cash flows are going to be occurring at the end of every period, just as a basic assumption. So in this case, it's going to be an end. You leave it alone. Now, just go take yourself back up to your present value and just say alpha solve. Now, present values on financial calculators always come out to be negative. If you put in a present value, make sure to put it in negative. It's just a weird thing. It's always been there since these calculators started coming out in the 1970s and 80s. I don't know why, but it's a negative, okay? So it's $25,164. The present value is 24,000. $25,164 and 76 cents. That's what that cash flow is worth right now. Now, here's what that means practically speaking. This is how we decide whether to say yes or no to a project. If someone said, well, we can get this project, we can do this project for $22,000, I'm going to say, oh, hell yeah, because it's worth $25,164 right now. So this is a go. But if someone says, well, this project, we can get it for $26,000, I'll say no. That's how we do the decision-making in projects. We say, if it costs more than the present value of the cash flow, I say no. If it costs less than the present value of the future expected cash flow, I say absolutely. That's the decision-making criterion still used to this day in most companies for project analysis. As a matter of fact, last week I was at a dinner with some finance people at a company at a company from their treasury, and I was saying, yeah, I still teach the old-fashioned present value, net present value, future expected cash flows. And one of the treasury officers said, well, that's what we all use anyway, so is there a new way? I said, yeah, there is. Some high-tech and really fancy new companies are using this really complicated way, and I teach it in the terminal course, FIL 349. But I warn them, you know, this is still the way that a lot of companies still do it. And I heard the confirmation of that last week. Well, yeah, we all do it this way. And they were seemed a little bit bothered when I said, yeah, there's a new way, and it's really creepy and weird how they're doing it. It has some weird philosophical implications, too. But anyway, there you go. That's how you do this. Okay, so you can go on with this all day long. And the calculator that is the Pearson calculator that's with the online resources when you're doing your tests and quizzes, it's very similar to this. It's just put in the numbers in the slots and say go. There's also, as I told you, a calculator, Pearson calculator you can get for your mobile phone and for your tablet too. And it's basically the same thing. Just put the numbers in the slots and say, find what I don't know here. And that's all there is to it anymore. It's a lot nicer this way, I'll tell you. But here's the thing. You can do a lot of different calculations. Going back to that idea of saving up money, eventually you're going to want to have that dream home, that house trailer. Okay, now the thing is that you want to walk in with a down payment. You'd like to walk in there with enough of a down payment so that you can go below that 80% loan-to-value ratio, because if you're below that, then you don't have to pay that mortgage insurance. So let's say that you were kind of aiming at a $100,000 house, a cheap little house on the south side of Memphis. So you'd want to save $20,000, okay? So the question would be, okay, what would I have to put in? How much would I have to put into an account an account that had an annual yield interest of 6.5% so that I would have $20,000 in 5 years. I'll put the level amounts in at the start of every quarter. In other words, I'm going to put in four payments a year. They'll all be exactly the same. and I'll put in my last quarter's payment, and then I'll ride it for a quarter, and then I'll go get my house, get my loan and all that. Again, I'm going to put in the same amount every time, quarterly, and I'm going to do it starting right away, and then I'll put in my last payment, ride it out for a quarter, and then I'll go get my loan and my house. Now, for this one to work, we have this calculator actually turns off like the real one does. What is it, saving battery? No, seriously, why would it turn off? What the hell? Anyway, okay, and, okay, here we got 5 years, but that's not how many periods there are. How many periods are there here? 5 years times 4 periods per year. You don't have to hit enter or anything. Just toggle it down. It'll work it out. I swear to you, I actually gave a test once where I had compounding weekly. And I had easily 20 students in that class come up and say, how many weeks are in a year? Anyway, 6.5%. But that's annual. You're going to have to divide that up into 4 pieces, because every quarter it will regenerate, it will recalculate. Don't forget to divide by the 6.5 was per year, but because we're going to kick in every quarter, interest will be recalculated every quarter. So don't ever forget that you have to multiply the number of years times the compoundings per year, and you have to divide the number of the interest rate by the number of compoundings per year. Don't forget that. That's the only place where you could really trip up on this one. Okay, present value. Do we know the present value here? There isn't any. You're not putting any money in now. But what do I want at the end? What do I want at the end? Yeah, I want 20 grand. Now, is this an end or a begin? What did I say there? At the start of every quarter. Start. End or begin. Look for the words, because that's going to, the words will guide you. Now we pull it back up, and what we're going to do is we're going to calculate how much each of these quarterly payments would be. Alpha, solve. I'd have to put in $840 every quarter to amass $20,000 in 5 years. This is pure straight up financial planning. You could actually plan ahead as long as, and I said this before, as long as you maintain the discipline and put this money in there every time, you'll be in business. This is how you can plan for different things, like for your retirement. Like, I don't know if, well, you probably have heard of things like IRA accounts. You put money in every year, and then you can, and it's shielded from taxes, and then you pull it all out when you retire. Well, this is how you would do it. How much do I have to put in every year to get a certain amount out at the end? Let's say that, for example, I'm going to start right now, and every year, on tax day, and it's tax day, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this for, let's say, 35 years. And I'm going to put it into an IRA that pays, let's say, 4.25%. And it's going to be annual, because you're going to do this once every year on tax day, starting right now, well, it's tax day today. And there's no kicker going in. There's no extra amount you're throwing in to start the ball rolling. You're just going to put in a certain amount of money, and you want to say at the end, that last year I put in my last one, ride it out my last year at work, and I want to come out with $1 million. And I'm going to do this at the beginning, yeah. So what do I have to make for my payments to do this? Alpha, solve. You have to put in about a little more than 12 grand every year for this to work, for this trick to work. If you could handle that, and if you could just do it every year, You'd have $1 million right out of that. And there are a lot of other things that you can do too and with this kind of thing, but I'm going to show you the most practical one of all. One of the most practical. Let's try this one. One thing, by the way, about these calculations, if you make a mistake and you put something in the wrong place or the wrong amount, the numbers just look so wrong that you can probably tell that you've done something screwy. Yeah. I think I could pull it up right now. I was not planning to do that on this calculator today. Hang on here. Let me mute this. I'll try to pull up the Pearson calculator just for a minute. And let's see if I can go into Pearson here. Hang on. I might be able to. Okay. Mozilla. Oh, I'm going to go into my account. That's what I'm going to do. It's just a pain in the butt to go into the account like that here. Hang on. MyFinanceLab.com. Oh, shoot. Seriously? There. Sign in. Let's do... .edu. Okay. Oh, goody. Hang on here. Looks like I am stuck. Okay, financial calculator. Okay, number of periods. What was the number of periods? 7. Interest per period would be per year 6.5 would be the present value would be 0, future value would be 20,000 FV. Cute pain. Okay, hang on here. Let me pull it up. This was the one I just did a minute ago. Now, what I'll do is I'll go back and I'll say 7 is N. No, let me do the one that what was the one that I just did? Which one? No, I was going to do the one, let me do this one first. Just 7 is N, and then your interest rate is 6.5, and that's your I over Y, and then your future value is 20,000, and that's FV, and then, was this a beginning or an ending one? End. Okay, so I don't want the begin, so all I do then is compute the payment. And there it is.
Okay, so from
the beginning,
you have to hit begin.
On this one, it's not it's a toggle, but you don't visually see the toggle. See it right there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I didn't know what that key was.
It's actually kind of cool. Look at this. It shows you the timeline, which is actually kind of an interesting thing, and it's in color and all that. I wish I could hold this calculator. It was 5. I'm sorry. I put in 5. 5. I was just testing you. Okay. Compute the payments. There's your damn payments right there. Yeah, in a way, the Pearson calculator is as easy as the TI-83. The only difference, of course, is that you can hold the TI-83 in your hand so that you can walk around and people will be really, really impressed by you're holding a TI-83. Okay. Okay. Now, let's try a simple problem here. And I'll do it on this one, and I'll do it on the TI. I didn't think I could pull this up this fast, but it was. Okay, now, what kind of a car would you like to have? I'm not talking, don't do dream car, you know, all that. Just a nice car. Can you name one?
Acura.
Yeah, an Acura is actually a pretty decent car. What's the price on those about right now? I mean, yeah, I was going to say, with decently equipped, you know, if you want one that has maybe a steering wheel, you can get about 35 grand. Okay, let's talk. What if we were to get a 60-month loan right now? Let's do a 60-month loan, a 5-year loan. That's 60 months for N. And right now, you could probably, some dealers are still in the range of about 3.99 APR. So what you're going to do is you're going to divide that into how many payments a year? 12. So don't forget to divide it up monthly. And then you're going to put that in as I over Y. And your present value, let's say we get to pay for the whole thing. In other words, and this is something that $35,000 positive negative. Don't forget, present values go in negative. And that'll be your price value, your price of the car. Okay, so now what we're going to do is our zero out our future value. And now we're going to go and figure out what our payment is. Compute the payment, $644.42 a month. There you go. You can figure out what your loan payment is. Even better than that, if you know what the bank's affordability threshold is, let's say they won't give you a loan for a car payment that's more than, let's say, about 20% of your disposable income after your other bills. You could figure out, okay, what kind of a car can I get? Let's say that you're going to pull $4,000 a month after all of your other fixed payments. And the bank is going to say, all right, we'll give you a loan, but we cannot give you a loan for payments that are more than 20% of that $4,000. So in other words, in that case, my payments would be $800 a month, okay? And I'm going to put that in for the payment. Let's leave the interest rate alone and all of that kind of stuff. And let's up here compute the present value. I can get a $43,000 car. You can actually do it backwards and figure out, all right, what kind of a car. Now, I don't recommend you go running out and looking for a $43,000 a year car. I mean, there's nothing, driving a Yugo isn't a crime, man. But anyway, now, one more. Mortgage payment. Well, actually, okay, something here. Do a reality check on this. If you keyed in something really wrong, you're going to have some payment that looks ridiculous. I did a loan for a car, and I had a student work out the payments on it. And some of the students forgot to multiply the number of years of the loan times 12. Well, they got these payments that were like $10,000 payments on the car. So I asked her, well, does that even make sense? And she said, I don't know, my dad pays for my car. So I just kind of got sad for a while, but okay. Let's try a 30-year fixed loan. Let's do a 30-year fixed loan. And let's get real here. Let's say that you want to get a $250,000 house. Now, you're going to put down a down payment of 10% on it. So that means that your loan will be $250,000 less $25,000. So you're going to need to borrow from the bank $225,000. Let's say that a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage right now, you can still pull 5.49% APR. 5.49% APR on it. Okay? Your first payment is going to happen a month from when you get the loan. That's the way it always is. So it's, in other words, it's an ordinary annuity. Okay, so we're going to go on 30 years for 12 months a year, and that'll be our N. Our interest rate would be 4.9% annually, chopped up 12 times every year, so that's divided by 12. And then we're going to say, all right, we want to get a loan of $225,000. Did I do that wrong? I can't tell. Is that 200? Did I put in? I put in one too many? Shoot. Okay. 225,000. Positive, negative. And that's going to be your price value. And there's going to be no future value. And your payments compute your payments. $1,276.11. And then you can check with, okay, Mr. Banker, what's your threshold? Well, for a home loan, we wanted to have it at no more than 30% of your income, disposable income. So what you then do is say, all right, I do $1,276 divided by 0.3. And if I did that, that'd be probably you'd have to be pulling about $5,000 a month, $5,000 a month, around there, to be able to afford this for the loan, for the bank to say yes to it. You can do this. You can now do this. You can calculate loan payments. You can go in there and figure out, all right, and also you can figure out where you have to haggle a car down to so that the payments are at some set value. I can walk in and say, I'm going to buy a car. I'm just not going to pay more than $300 a month for it out the door. So you can then back up and see what the price would be to make your, with everything, title, tax, and all that, for you to be able to buy this car on your budget, which you have set at $300 for a car every month. That's what you can do with this little thing that I've shown you here today. This is real consumer finance. It's the kind of stuff that everyone should actually have kind of an idea of how to do this. Going to take the calculators off the board here for a while. I'm going to show you a couple of things. They're too simple to do with a calculator. But anyway, that should get you through. I'm going to kill this. Close all my tabs. Close this. And let's log off. Okay. Now I'm going to turn on the lights here, and I'm going to show you one last thing for today. Two things, actually. And this is real stuff, and it kind of gives me a chance to introduce. When people think about stock, they're thinking about common stock. That kind of stock you buy, it's ownership interest, you get the residual claim to the cash flow, you get dividends, you get capital gains, you vote at the directors' meetings and all that kind of stuff. Common stock. There is actually... First of all, there are actually, in some companies, there are different classes of common stock. Like some of these old companies that were started by some family a century ago, the insiders have a Class A common stock, so they get super voting on board of directors. And the only stock you can buy as an outsider is Class B stock or something like that. So always watch out for that, because those kinds of stocks are out there. But there is another kind of stock that is not common stock. It actually has a superior claim to dividends to common stock. It's called preferred stock. Now, preferred stock is an ownership. It's equity. It's ownership. You have to pay your bills first. You have to pay your bondholders, your debt holders. And then the preferred shareholders and the common shareholders can then get a dividend or whatever. The difference is that, first of all, preferred, as the name implies, will get a dividend before common stock. So if they can't pay a preferred dividend, the company can't. It can't pay a common dividend. Preferred stock also has a feature. It's actually, in some ways, very similar to a bond, except that a bond expires at the time of maturity, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, whatever. Preferred stock is equity, so it lives forever. And here's how a preferred would do. I'll just pull one out of the top of my head. JNR preferred. ~2.4% par value, $40 per share. Now, what this would mean, now typically preferred stock is cumulative. So in other words, I don't even write that. Cumulative means that if the company doesn't pay this preferred dividend, it has to catch up all of its preferred dividends before it can ever give a dividend to the common. So it's like they start owing you, and if they can't pay you a dividend this year, then they have to pay you this dividend and the next dividend next year. And if they can't do that, you just keep accumulating, and they can't pay the common shareholders the dividend until they have completely caught up with the preferred. That, and another thing about it is the dividend on common is volatile. It's what the company sets. It's, well, we declare a dividend, we're going to make it this much this time. Well, we can't afford a dividend, we're not going to pay a dividend. Common shareholders can't say a thing about that. But preferred has a stated dividend, and it's right there. The stated dividend is this as a percent of par. So in other words, this dividend on this stock is $40 times 0.024. $40 times 0.024. That's the dividend. It's right there on the certificate itself. It's guaranteed. That's what it's going to be forever. Let me pull up my calculator here on my phone. Seriously, what do you mean that's not my code? I know my damn code. Oh, sorry. Okay, so 0.024 times 40 equals... In other words, this, for every share of preferred you own, you get a 96 cent a year dividend. You get it. You see why these are great for older people? It's a fixed income security. It just basically, you buy these and forever you get the same amount of money in a check at the end of every year. That's how it works. So historically, they have been really a successful instrument for older people and for certain types of funds that want a very stable, known cash flow. The odd thing was that it was, I guess, 2 years ago, I took the finance club students up to First Chicago Trust. And they were talking about creating portfolios that have very stable dividend flows and all these different gyrations. And I finally said, why don't you just buy preferred? I mean, that's what we used to do back in the day. And they said, well, preferred is just not very, it's just not sexy. I thought, you son of a dog. You're gyrating around so it looks like you're working hard to create something that has a cash flow, like something that just sits there you can buy. Really? Oh, well, it's old people. They're rich. They can afford the high commissions. Anyway, look. Okay, it's very stable dividend. Interestingly enough, the question would be, what would be the price of this? Now, it should be around $40, but we have to say, okay, suppose the market is discounting the cash flows from these dividends, the cash flow from this preferred stock at 2.1%. At 2.1%. What I'm saying is that the market is assessing the risk. And the risk that they're assessing is that this is 2.1% risk. In your judgment, would this stock be worth more than $40 or less than $40?
More.
Exactly. We would say this stock should be selling at a premium to par. At a premium to par. Simply because the market right now is saying this stock, it's at a risk level that it should yield, it should deliver on the price you pay for it. It should deliver about 2.1%. But this stock is fixed forever at 2.4%. So that means that this is a valuable security to the market. So here is the formula, and it's such an easy formula, it's ridiculous. The present value of a perpetuity, a stream that is the same forever and ever and ever, is the cash flow divided by the market's discount rate. The market's discount rate. So in this case, the cash flow is $96 a share forever divided by 0.021. And if you do that survey, really, why is this calculated? I found myself, I was doing this last semester and I was listening to the podcast. I was muttering my code to get into my phone and it was on the podcast. Anyway, divided by 0.021. 4571. Well, look at that. The market will pay a premium for this preferred stock because it pays a dividend more than the market says it needs to. So it will pay a premium for this stock. Again, we say this preferred will sell at a premium to par. At a premium to par. Now, notice something interesting. If the market's interest rates start to rise, what will happen to the price of this preferred stock? Which way will it go? Talk to me. What would you say? If interest rates start to rise, what will happen to the price of this stock? Go down. That same principle. Yields go up. Prices go down. It was blazing all over the paper yesterday. Stock prices fall in advance of Fed meeting. In other words, the markets are figuring, okay, we expect the Fed to push interest rates up officially. And so guess what happens to stock prices? They drop. Yeah. It's just the way, it's a physics principle, literally. Okay, so now, that tells you how we can price a share of preferred stock out there in the market. Here is a variation on the formula. Now, this one we use for some companies. The company would have to have a stable dividend on its common stock. What I'm going to do, I'm going to show you a real simple formula for pricing common stock. But the common stock that I would be pricing, it would have a very stable dividend. It would have a constant growth rate of the dividend. I don't know if I meant, I think I told you a story. There were a couple of times in consulting jobs where companies were getting on their feet and they said, well, I think it's time for us to issue a dividend. And I pointed out to them the danger of doing that is because the market, once you give them that dividend, they're going to expect that. They got candy once, they'll come back for it. And if you don't give them a dividend after that, they're going to punish you hard. And not only should you be giving them a dividend, you should probably have a plan for a growth rate of that dividend so that you're showing them not only can you afford a dividend all the time, but you can afford to advance that dividend on some kind of a growth path. 1%, 2% growth per year of the dividend, something like that. So once you start issuing dividends, it's like the Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave. You're done. You're stuck with that dividend. And if you stop doing the dividend, they will slap you silly. Okay? Now, so that's a caution. This would be for a company that has a dividend policy, and the dividend has a stable growth rate year over year, at least for the foreseeable future. You can't see things years out, but here's the formula. It's a perpetuity, but it's called a constant growth perpetuity. And the formula is this. The price value is the dividend one period out. You've got to watch that. That's where you can make a mistake and get it wrong on a test or a quiz. This is the dividend one period out, divided by the market's discount on the cash flow minus that growth rate. Now, the dividend one period out, you take the dividend that you've got now and you times it by the growth rate, one plus the growth rate. So in other words, make sure that if you are given the dividend that was just issued, you grow it one period. It's just the way the formula works. That's the only place you can trip up. So, CNC... Common just paid a 25-cent per share dividend that is expected to grow for the foreseeable future. And put that in parentheses, for the foreseeable future. Who knows what's going to happen in 50 years or something like that. At a rate of, let's say, 2.5%. Okay? If the market discounts the cash flow from these dividends at, let's say, 8.2%, what is the price of CNZ Common? In other words, what is the present value of that future expected cash flow of that dividend forever growing at that constant rate? Like I said, don't just break out what you'll need. You're going to need the dividend one, which will be the dividend right now, 25 cents per share, grown at, that's kind of an unfortunate thing. That's D0, and that's the growth rate. Kind of unfortunate. I made those same, kind of look like the same number, but there you go. Okay, so. All you have to do to calculate this, and here's a calculator thing you got to keep your eye on. Okay, I'm going to do the price value of this stock right now is 25 cents per share times 1 plus 0.025, all divided by, the market is discounting at 0.082 minus the growth rate. What was growth rate? 2.5%, 0.025. There you go. Watch it when you do this. Make sure that you trap that denominator in parentheses. Okay? Just watch it. It's just a technical thing. And I've seen too many times students just forget to do that. And, of course, I put the multiple choice answer that you would get if you didn't do it, just so I can be an asshole, and you get it wrong because you see that, oh, that's the answer I got. It's on there. It must be right. No, I figured out what 0.082 minus 0.025 is without the parentheses. If you do it with the parentheses, Seriously? I'm going to do 0.25 times 1.025 divided by open parentheses 0.082 less 0.025, close the parentheses. $4.96, $4.50 a share. It's a penny stock. Is that right? Yeah. That's all there was to it. Got the price of the stock right there. And that, again, this works only with companies that have stable dividend policy and a pretty constant growth rate. Doesn't have to be perfectly constant, but you would want one that wasn't going all over the place from year to year. If you can do that, you can price a stock, at least get a good ballpark of what the price should be, and then compare the price to the market. Suppose that I were to see that this stock is right now, I can buy shares of this stock at $3.80 a share. I'd buy the hell out of this stock because this calculation, it can't be that far off. That stock is too low, according to my calculation. Okay, that's what that's about. And I think that's all I have for you. I thank you.